This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we are live on our Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook channels with Necessary Noise. And you're in Los Angeles right now?
No, I'm actually in like the Bay Area. So
Bay Area.
San Francisco area. So
that's cool. Well, you're in California.
Yeah, I'm in California. It's pretty sunny out here right now. So.
Yeah, we're in New England and we're getting ready to get a snowstorm. So
oh yeah. I'm originally from Iowa, and yeah, it's really cold there. I just talked to my mom today, and she's like, it's really cold here. I'm like, it's not cold here at all. So
yeah, you never really get that.
Yeah.
So just to start off, we're going to do a full kind of interview. This is what we do. We interview emerging and indie artists from around the world. And we are like live on those channels, as I said, but you'll see scrolling below in order to pay for us to do this. We have sponsors. One of them is an iOS app called Newsly, which reads the news back to you in a natural voice. And so if you can stop scrolling and start listening, if you use coupon code GHOST2021, and that's still right, you'll get 1 month free premium subscription. So, you know, stop scrolling, start listening, check it out, use the GHOST2020 code, and you'll get that 1 month free. And then the other sponsor that we have is a company that we've been working with, and they sponsored our festival, is Double Jack Online out of Europe. And they do an online lottery. If you take your cell phone now, you can use that scan code, and they do NFTs, so you can convert your art from your band into NFTs and monetize it. They can also do what they call crowdfunding. So they can crowdfund your project if you're trying to get like on the road, if you're trying to do an album, they can work with you. They can create a scan code for you that will actually allow you to use that code is my scan code, and they can create a URL as you see below, like a Double Jack Phantom Electric Ghost, and you get passive income. And you have a screen, you can meet with our marketing director. We did like an online info commercial for our festival a couple of weeks ago, so we can get you into that. And so that's what it's all about with some of the sponsors. And we'll get back to the primary reason we're doing this is to talk to Necessary Noise. And we're going to actually, we do have a banner for you. The one we're using right now, I think, is your Facebook.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which you see down there.
I don't even know what it looks like. So, oh, their Facebook? Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, just your banner.
Yeah.
So the next thing we'd like to do is, before we get into like this behind the music type of interview, is we like people to actually, you know, hear the band that we're talking to. So yeah, we've got queued up like a cover. You did a cover.
Yeah, I did a cover early last year with a couple of dudes that are my friends. Had filmed it. It was just kind of a spontaneous thing, and it turned into a bigger thing of like, hey, this is kind of cool. We should like take some recording. I was recording at the time the actual tracks, and I was like, oh, let's take some footage from that and splice it into here for this cover. And yeah, it's cool. It's just a little one-off thing. So
yeah, we just get a picture of what you look like and sound like. So before, I think we think that that's really cool. Cause we used to just do audio podcast and we couldn't do it.
Yeah,
we tried to do it and we didn't do it that well. So now at least being able to do the YouTube video is a lot better. So I'm going to put you on mute and we're going to play the whole video and we'll come back and
cool.
Do the full broadcast interview. Thank you.
Cool.
Here we go. So you're on mute for now. And then we're going to kick it off right now.
I had a dream. I got everything I wanted. I what you think. And if I'm being honest, it might have been a nightmare to anyone who might care. Thought I could fly. So I stepped off the golden. Nobody cried. Nobody. anybody even notice. I saw them standing right there. I kinda thought they might care. I had a dream. I got everything I wanted. But when I wake up, I see you with me. And you say, as long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can learn to. If I could change the way that you see yourself, would I wonder why? They don't deserve you. I tried to scream, but my head was underwater. They call you weak, like you're not somebody's daughter. Could have been a nightmare. Kinda thought they might care. And it feels like yesterday was a year ago. But I don't wanna let anybody know. Everybody wants something from me now. I don't wanna let them down. I had a dream. I got everything I wanted. But when I wake up, I see you with me. And you say, as long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can learn to. If I could change the way that you see yourself, do it again, I do it again. If they knew what they said, go straight to my head. What they say instead. If I knew it all then, I do it again, I do it again. If they knew what they said, go straight to my head. What they say instead.
So we're back. I can hear you, right?
Yes. Can you hear
yeah.
me?
Yeah. So that's beautiful. I think that's a really good representation of your sound.
Maybe. Actually, to be honest with you, it's
please maybe it's not, but it's a cool it's a cool performance though.
Yeah. It was definitely something different. Like, mostly my style is more like, I would say like rock, pop, punk sometimes. But yeah, like that's kind of the more stuff I write. But then towards the end of my recording stuff, I ended up doing a lot more acoustic and stuff kind of like that and incorporating it with it. So, but yeah,
that's good, cool. Good for an album though. 'Cause it shows like if you're going to do like, if you're going to not just do singles, if you do an album or EP, then it shows like the breadth of your capability when you can do like that kind of intimate singer songwriter type of thing.
Yeah, that's actually a huge part of the records that I'm doing. Like, it's a concept thing, and I love when artists are able to do like different versatile things, you know, and still have like a brand behind it and an idea. Yeah. So I tried to do that as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm a child of the 70s. I'm 54, right? So I grew up listening to 8-tracks and vinyl. And, you know, and the album was the way I music was delivered to me, you know, that's I'm album guy, even though we're in a Spotify playlist world, I still try to do concept albums and like, okay, well, Peg fans get me, but maybe not, but more than that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's cool. I do see it coming back. I mean, it's weird. Like in the hip hop genre, there's a lot of people doing concepts.
The butterfly. I mean, this, I know that was like what, like 8-9 years ago at this point, but like that was huge.
Tyler, like Tyler the Creator, every album is a concept. You know.
Yep. he's a great example. You know.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah, you can, like, when they get people who tell you, like, you can't get people to listen to albums, it's like, well, in hip-hop, people are listening to entire albums.
Yeah.
You know, so it is, it's just like maybe some genres, they're not into it. It's more single-driven, but I digress. What I like to do is I like to talk about, like, an artist from the beginning. So one of the first questions I always ask is, like, when did you first get into music? Like, at what age did you start? Like in the music, even if it's like just just an entry level like event.
So usually I would say like fifth or sixth grade, but I actually, like, not even a month or two ago, I found a photo of myself when I was like 2 or 3 playing drums, and it made me remember a little bit that, like, oh yeah, that's right. I've always really been like into music. Even when I was like 2 or 3, my dad would take me to like churches and stuff, or like, he's a physical therapist, and he would take me to different spots and I would sing, and like, he would like play the Everly Brothers or Beatles and stuff and make me pick out the harmonies. I was like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. That's really weird. But yeah, like, I would recognize harmonies. And that's another crucial aspect. Like my other co-engineer, or engineer Sean, did the same thing. Like, we just love picking out harmonies and looking at melodies and how to deconstruct them. So I'd say very early on, just having those kind of memories of like singing harmonies, drums, and then I refused to play guitar up until about fifth or sixth grade. And then my friend did it, and Guitar Hero came out, and I was like,
You start doing it on a gamer version of it, and then
I did Guitar Hero, and I'm like, oh, I could learn this song. So yeah. It's like, yeah.
That's interesting because I'm a keyboardist, but I'm a frustrated guitar player because I have a brother, right? I've got two brothers. And my younger brother, you know, he picked up the guitar and he immediately could do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I couldn't do it. I tried to do it. I had one. And then I picked up like a keyboard and I'm like, oh, I can do this better. I just naturally had an aptitude for the keys. And so, The weird thing is because I wanted to be a guitar player, I try to get my Moogs and my Rolands and all my hardware sense to channel guitar type things. And so I have this kind of punk aesthetic in my music.
That's cool.
Because I'm a frustrated guitar player. Yeah.
Guitar is a different kind of instrument sometimes than piano. I did, actually, now that you're saying that, I did piano first before guitar, and I did okay at it. It was like fourth grade or something. And I should have looked at these questions beforehand, because I kind of like don't remember some stuff from my childhood like all the time. But like, I played French horn and then I played piano, and I was like okay at both of them, but then like guitar hit me, and you know, it was a little different. So it was kind of the opposite of what you had. So you're better.
Yeah, I mean, I actually started in the woodwinds. I mean, I was a flute, clarinet, sax.
That's cool.
But then I liked music, right? And I'm like, well, I could write jazz, or I could write classical type stuff, but like, I like the Beatles, right? I like the Stones, I like Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I can't really write Pink Floyd on my clarinet.
Yeah.
So,
well, you technically could if you listen.
I could, but I tried. But I was like, you know, I need a synth or something. And then I really got into hardware sense, because this is like, you know, 78, 79, and there weren't any DAWs, right? So you'd go get a Tascam or a Fostex, and you would get like your guitar or your synth, and you just layer.
Yep.
And that's what I still actually like to do that rather than using a DAW.
Yeah.
Just because that's what I started with. And, you know, but I understand that like it's a DAW age, but, we'll get to that question later, but
I think I saw that.
But how long have you been actually working on music once you found that you had like a talent for it? When did you would say that you actually started working on it?
Another funny thing that just came up this last week was I was asked to kind of start a band with my friends in about, I want to say seventh grade probably. And we started like a punk ska band in high school in Cedar Falls, Iowa, called the Karate Lincolns. And we weren't the greatest. We thought we were the greatest, but I definitely wasn't the greatest. And I was a little seventh grade egomaniac, and I was doing most of the singing work, and then my other friend did some of it, and guitar. But I learned how to play guitar and sing at the same time, which was like, I remember when I first, I don't even say auditioned for the band or whatever, because they couldn't have somebody sing or something. I didn't know how to write a melody at all. Like, I mean, you kind of get thrown into the fire. Like, then that's, I guess, how I best operate is just, you know, kind of going in there and doing it.
Just doing it. Yeah, I think that's the cool thing when I started, you know, with my band, was in, you know, garage basement band, and we had this guy that was a jazz drummer in school. He played in the jazz band, and I convinced him, like, I want to do like a punk band, because I was really super into the Clash and Joy Division.
Right? Yeah,
it was like 79, and I'm like, Joy Division and the Clash, let's do something like that. Like, let's try to mix like keyboards, because that's early like new wave with like the kind of punk attitude that Joe Strummer had. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I like, right? And so then I just, and you didn't really, my whole thing with Joe, about Joe Strummer was like, you don't have to have pitch.
Yeah.
You know, you just do whatever you want.
Yeah, pretty punk.
Yeah, so that was that's the one thing I liked about the punk aesthetic, is like, then you didn't have to try to have a perfect voice, like a Motown, like a, you know, Barry Gordy's, like, guys, you know, you're not going to get to that level, like. So punk gave you a permission that, oh yeah, it could be like a CBGB moment. And
yeah.
I'm just going to come in there like Lou Reed, or come in there like, you know, like Joe Strummer, and just come at that perspective, you know?
Yeah. Definitely more punk, you know, for sure. That's cool.
So when did you start actually realizing that you could write your own music? Cause like, there's one thing, like a lot of people can get into music and they become session musicians. They are in classical orchestras, but they don't write their own music. Like they work with other people, and maybe they add to other people's music, but they're really not primarily a singer songwriter. What made you want to be like a singer songwriter?
Same kind of answer, but a little different, which is adding on to that whole, I was thrown into the fire of it. Like, hey, write a melody for this. We don't have anything. I was like, okay, I don't know how to do this, but let's do this. And progressively, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, I got better at it. And then one of the last songs we wrote for that Karate Lincoln's album, I hate saying that name, for that album was like more of a progressive punk thing, which is what I'm into now. And it was like, you know, different, what defined what I call the necessary noise, like trademark thing, which is, it sounds kind of easy to the listener. I always want it to be kind of more approachable. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard for the musician, and my live guys can back me up on that, is like, what the heck? This is really, really like a hard part to play, or something weird or difficult. Like
Steely Dan hard.
Yeah, Steely Dan is quite a musician as well.
Yeah,
it's like, that's when I realized, like, okay, I can start writing like how I want to write kind of things. And I want to say about senior year of high school, I started like what Necessary Noise became with a friend. It was like a two piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just doing a lot of guitar writing. I'd taken a little bit of music theory from my teacher, Mr. Liu, and I tried to figure out what was best, what worked best for me. So I spent a lot of time on my own figuring it out, and now I'm here. So 10 years later, whatever that would be.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting, the drive that makes somebody a singer-songwriter, because a lot of times it's because you write songs because it's like therapy. You know, I've talked to artists, they're like, you know, I have to write. I'm not just trying to write to be a pop star. I'm doing it because it helps me work out my life, right? So,
oh yeah,
is that part of what you do? Because I found a lot of singer-songwriters will say, like, you know, even if I never get anything on the radio, I write songs because it helps me work things out in my life.
Yeah. One of the biggest selling points of what I do is that it's a little autobiographical, but also kind of a storyline and the concept album stuff. And it's very therapeutic. I mean, it's very cathartic for me to write out some of my feelings and emotions. But it's also nice because I tend to displace some of that as well, and not, you know, internalize it too much, and putting it out into a different storyline is a little bit more beneficial for me than just like saying, oh, this is me, woe is me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that is that's the singer songwriter trap sometimes. It's like, is everything like your story, or do you go like Dylan and
Dylan,
and actually create other characters that people still try to trace back to you, right? But
yeah,
but you know, I think every time Dylan does something and it seems like it's somebody else, people say, well, that probably is him.
Yeah,
like,
but Bob Dylan was such a storyteller. You know, that was his thing. Was like he was able to craft a story into words and very like esoteric, weird words and like weird phrases and stuff that were very visual and colorful.
Yeah, but even when you get to like Blood on the Tracks,
yeah,
which is supposed to be about him, it's still like in this third person.
Yep, it is, and
it's like it's supposed to be about his breakup with his wife, but he's talking about going out to the Midwest and being a cook in a logger camp.
And let me tell you something. One of my best friends, unfortunately, he passed away. He was an older gentleman named Chris Weber, and he actually worked with Dylan on Blood on the Tracks in the Midwest in Minnesota. He owned a little guitar shop, and so I heard a lot of the Blood on Tracks stories from back in the day, but. Yeah, that was like a thing he did. He went out to the Midwest. He went to Minnesota, and like I don't know about the logging stuff, but like
but he create these like images like in an idiot wind and things like that. It's like, okay, is that really him? It's supposed to be about him, but it still seems a little removed. Which I think is a cool thing if you're a singer songwriter, you can kind of craft these stories that are about you, but then it's hard to pin down that it's you. Then it's very interesting. But So we always like to ask about influences and reference points, and that always is kind of a little dodgy because people don't want to be pinned down. Right. But yeah, who really were the people that inspired you?
Let's see. I think growing up, one of the first influences was My Chemical Romance, the Black Parade and stuff. That was like what got me really into music. System of a Down too. Trying to think, Green Day a little bit later, but that was like a big thing. And it's kind of all come full circle, because when you're a kid, you like something and then you're told you're not supposed to like something. Like My Chem is cringy. So then I hated My Chem, and then I kind of came back around. I'm like, oh no, it's pretty rad. And I draw a lot of influence from that. It's just the creative songwriting aspect of things. Trying to think. I mean, even just I take from a lot of different like sources. Like,
yeah. I mean, I don't like the like.
No,
a lot
no,
of,
yeah.
I think a lot of times people want to pin somebody to a genre, and I do have ask like a like writing style genre questions.
Yeah,
but even my own stuff I call expansive sound. And the reason I do that, because like if in electronic music, you know, everybody thinks you're a DJ or everybody thinks it's EDM or trance. And I'm kind of like, no, like I'm talking about electronic music that goes back to like, Genesis.
Yeah, exactly.
And it goes back to like, you know, Funkadelic and Funkadelic. Stevie Wonder songs in the Key of Life. I'm talking about that kind of synthesis where somebody's using like a Yamaha GS1. Or like a Dream Machine, or they're using the Prophet 5 or the Jupiter 8. And we're not just talking about like samples or CDJs. We're talking about like classic, you know, modular Moogs or ARP 2500s or 2600s. That's the kind of music I kind of grew up in. And it goes everywhere from Sun Ra, you know, a jazz band like that to, you know, Gary Newman, you know, or Brian Eno, you know, you can kind of go, that kind of direction, and it's very wide. You know, it's not as narrow as people try to make it now.
Right, exactly. I think a lot of additional pop stars today derive from different musical inspirations, and I think especially nowadays with pop, it's and rock too. It's more like taking from a culmination of sources. Like, you know, I could also be like, I just mentioned like in my genre what I like, but I also really like stuff like, I don't know, like Coltrane or Kamasi Washington. And then I'll listen, like you said, Funkadelic, but I'll go around and listen to like Pantera, or I'll listen to like Acid Bath and I'll be like, this is sick. Or like Corpse Grinder or some like Cannibal Corpse. But then I'll like go the next day and I'll be like, oh, let me listen to Mozart for a little while. So I listening to different things. And, also, I mean, there's different aspects of it. Like, what do I take away from this lyrically? What I take away from this songwriter aspect, or like, you know, musicality of stuff? And then what do I also take away from it from an engineering standpoint, which is where I'm really at in my life now because I'm editing these records. So
yeah, it's kind of like the George Martin fifth Beatle thing.
Yeah,
a lot of people still bring up the Beatles, even this far into history, just because the kind of that George Martin fifth Beatle idea is that what I like about, and I saw a documentary on George Martin, and what was really interesting, he was going on about like, you know, Sgt. Pepper's and Rubber Soul. And he was saying, you know, the Beatles met me and they knew I used to work on Peter Sellers comedy records. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the Peter Sellers comedy records that he used to do had backward tape loops, mm-hmm. all these overdubs, all the techniques that he ended up using on like
Sgt. Pepper's. Yep.
Yeah. And the Beatles actually dug that. So they came into the relationship with him knowing that he did that kind of stuff and eventually started to incorporate it. And he also talked about it in terms of sound paintings.
Yep.
And he said, well, I really like Monet. And he said, and I like the idea of a sound painting because I could have just recorded the Beatles like they were in Berlin.
Yeah.
Right? Or I could actually interpret them and create this like studio version of them that's a sound painting.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't play it live, but you can do in the studio something you can't do live, and that becomes like a sound painting.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And I think a lot of people now with their DAWs, that's what they do. They basically do what George was doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like back it was a lot harder. It was a lot harder to do that, you know, back then with like, you know, your restrictions. But I always believe restrictions breed creativity as well. So like, I feel like even though we have DAWs and, you know, Pro Tools and stuff today, it's not, we can't quite get the sound that we got back then. We try to replicate it. Like, it's why us guitarists still use vacuum tubes in our amplifiers, or this is a tube mic, you know, from Neumann 47. It's not an actual Neumann, but they use Neumann 47s, you know, like we're still trying to get that.
That's why I'm a big believer in like hardware synths, just because I use Moogs, just because analog synths like Moogs have such character, and like just every day I turn it on, it acts different. And actually I use my synths to like inspire what I'm going to do, because I don't try to tame my Moog and make it do what I want. I kind of like, okay, what's it giving me today?
Right.
And I can go with it. I'll go with the direction it gives me. And then I find that that actually gives me a lot of inspiration if I just let my modular synths just turning them on one day and like not using them warmed up or using them warmed up, it is like act different. And if you go start playing with the CV and then suddenly boom, the sound design drives the song and you really didn't know where you were going to go. But it kind of becomes an integral part of the song. I know you can do it on a DAW, but there's something about actually using a CV on a hardware synth that makes you do things that are maybe more immediate because you have all those controls.
Absolutely. I agree.
That in itself is why I'm still kind of a hardware guy, because doing all those controls, you have no idea. It's like a guy on a Hammond organ using the drawbars and using the pedals. It's like there's something about that immediacy of doing that that can drive the song. It can make you make a choice. That if it's something's really buried in the menus, how would you ever really do that?
Probably not. Exactly. Probably not. Yep, I'm on the same board. That's why I got a couple thousands of dollars worth of preamps behind me. It's like, man, I could emulate a Neve 1073, or I could have a 1073. You know, it's like it's a big difference. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, I think that like having a Neve. Yeah, having that Neve technology. I mean, I use some that stuff from Soyuz microphones is kind of got that. Right. Yeah, I got some of their preamps and stuff. I got a launcher that I've been using heavily on vocals because it just makes that kind of the analog nature of circuits is like it just creates something really beautiful. Even though it's electronic, it just seems like that when you get to analog circuitry or you get to the old school, you know, solid state stuff, it just seems to have a character. Mm-hmm. That's like the same as like making a choice of a guitar, right? Using a Telecaster or a Stratocaster or whatever. You make a choice of what the pickups are, how it's going to behave. It behaves different.
Yep.
You know, And I think that's the, you know, the, and the limitations sometimes, like you said, I think like I mentioned, like limitations can drive creativity. Like if you have too many choices, sometimes it's good to narrow your choices.
Yes, sir. That's right. I believe that.
So, yeah. So one of the things I also like to ask is like what kind of workflow process, because, you know, people are in the DAW, people go to a recording studio, people have their own recording studios, they work with producers. So I guess if you start at that, like, you have your own home studio. Do you ever go to bigger studios? What kind of DAW do you use? Maybe get in that kind of frame
That's a good question. 3 years ago, well, I want to say I've been recording for quite a while, since about 2012-13, but I wouldn't say that was recording well. About 2012 or 2013, I started learning how to record. I actually sat down with like the Logic Pro at the time 9 manual, and I was just trying to figure it all out, and I was just clipping preamps, doing terrible things. it was bad. About 3 years ago, I decided, you know, I'm going to work on this big body of work. I've been dreading it for a while. I've been like creating the songs, but now I have to put it to paper, and I already had like the concept in mind. I just had to actually like do it. And I knew it was going to be a daunting process. I'm like, I might have to do this until I'm like 27 or 28. Now that number moved to 29 or 30, unfortunately. But basically, I found that while doing all this home recording stuff, I wasn't getting the results I wanted. I kind of set myself up for failure, though, because I'm like comparing my records to my heroes' records, or like not even my heroes, sometimes like just really good sounding records that are like standards.
Yeah.
So I decided, okay, I need to look for, you know, I can't play drums that well. I programmed all the drums. So I found a drummer who's one of my heroes, and I had him play on the record. So it's only myself. I wrote and performed everything except for the drums, which I still wrote, but then I had him like go in there and Jaredize it and make them.
There's nothing like a real drummer. I mean, I think the Motown Stax sound kind of can show you what a really classic drummer can do.
Yeah.
Or even like jazz. If I get into bands like Sun Ra and like Davis and Coltrane, you know, the techniques of jazz drummers and soul drummers from the Motown, like, you know, the Purdy Shuffle and stuff like that. There's this stuff that the techniques they have that I, you know, I could have my 808 and I could do something really cool, 727 or 9, you know, or even a Lin drum. But if I ever go work with the drummers I work with, just their ability to do stuff on cymbals.
And right.
It's like, okay, well, I just throw out what I did.
It's funny because I actually know a lot of, like on paper, I know the technique. I know you need to have cymbal control, and I know how you need to hit the snare. I know what you need to do, but I physically can't do it. I just suck with, like, I can play a good beat. Mm-hmm. I just can't perform what I want. If you're
you want that Motown drummer or that Stax drummer that actually
more complicated stuff.
Yeah, so. It's something about like having a Stax player to trying to do it on a Kronos, right?
Yeah,
you know, and you could do what you could, and you could even write it in the DAW. But once you get like a really good baritone or alto guy, they're gonna blow it out. It's like if I write my bass line on my Moog bass line can be very good.
Right.
But if I get a guy that plays like Bootsy, he's going to blow it out. You know, it's just like, why? Like, I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Bootsy Collins, dude. That's good.
Bootsy's
good. At that point, I had a drummer, and I was like, okay, this is great. He's for the record only, because he's not going to perform live, because, you know, he wouldn't want to do that because he's this dude. Mm-hmm. But basically he recommended a couple guys, and I immediately went with Sean, who's my engineer. Sean, basically, without him I wouldn't have a record, though, because like he was showing me a lot of the ropes. Like the first day I went over there, we just kind of compared notes on stuff, and he's like, your mix is so freaking loud. it's really bad. He's like, but he's like, hey, you know, like, here's what you need to do kind of stuff. And he and I are really good friends. I wouldn't be anywhere without him. So he owns a very, very nice studio in Los Angeles area. It's like Inland Empire Riverside. So having to go to an actual studio for like because honestly, you can't record drums in this room or the spare room I have here. It just doesn't sound good.
Studio is kind of required for drums.
So we went to the studio. We knocked out, what are we at, 48 or 50 songs throughout the course of a year. Jared put in a lot of work. Sean put in a lot of work. I obviously put in a lot of work there, but to go back to your original question, I do a lot of stuff here as well at this home studio, because I ended up getting a lot of gear recommendations from Sean and upping my studio over the last 2 years, three years. But there's nothing quite like going to a studio where it's already prepped for you, but also not having to be the producer, because I'm always in production mindset. I record other artists as well. Yeah. It's really hard to switch caps. Most people can't do that without being biased. I'm surprisingly okay at switching hats, but it's nice to have a guy sit there in the chair, press the buttons for you while you just work on whatever you need to work on and be like, hey, your guitar part, you know, like, not change it, but like, you need to hit harder or you need to like,
yeah, just like having that producer, having an engineer give you that. What I like about producers and engineers that I really respect are the ones that enhance what you are doing and don't try to turn you into what they do. Right.
Yeah, of course.
Because there's some producers, like, they'll just mold somebody in, they'll make a sound and that's their sound. Everybody gets put into that box. And that's not exactly what I'm that's why I'm indie, because I kind of do what I want. But like anybody that takes my sound and actually enhances it and it makes different choices, but it's still like basically 90% of what the demo is, it just sounds better. Right. It's like somebody put it on a Neve board and fixed it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
go ahead.
No, that's what I like. You know, I saw a documentary about the whole like Sound City
Sound City. That's a great
and just showing you what a really good board and engineers can make up, like, you know, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, you know, is because it was on that board and because he had really good sound engineers making choices using a really good board like that. You know, that just makes like those classic albums sound so good, you know.
Yep. I was just thinking of Sound City. It's really cool. Like, I really like that. That board is legendary too, but like, it's what everybody strives for, you know. Now it's just sitting in Dave Grohl's house.
He has it. Like, I own it. I got it.
So, actually, the drummer who's on the record, actually, I think he told me that he helped. I don't know if he's on film for it, but he helped move with Dave
to get it out of the Sound City to Dave's house.
Huge. He said he had like 10 beefy guys or something like that. Like,
that's a massive machine. Yeah. It just, that kind of goes back to like the Moog type of idea, because that thing is built like a Moog.
Yeah,
you know, it's all like that old circuitry. You know, it's just, there's something about the warmth of that. It has its own kind of life, you know. It's just, and you can do all kinds of cool stuff with digital, and I got digital wavetable synths.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, FM type synths. But I really do like my, you know, my Mini Moog and my grandmother and, you know, some of the older like ARP type stuff. There's something about the way that stuff sounds, you know?
Yeah. This kind of blends an answer from one of your previous questions as well, and on top of what you just said. So working in the music industry, I wear a lot of different hats. So I'm a musician and audio engineer, but I'm also like a technician. So like, I work on guitar amplifiers and I work on like guitars themselves and some analog gear I've worked on. But like, it's really interesting to see what they put inside, you know, like, especially these recreations of like Neve 1073s or like, I'm looking at the shout out to Coil Audio, who makes amazing preamps. Like, these are all based on Western Electric preamps, like from, I think it was like the 40s or 40s or 50s. And it's just those octet tube sounds. And like, I seriously went through 4 or 5 years of just demoing different preamps. Right. Preamps and mics as well. And I just could never, I got kind of a higher register. So I'm like a tenor, counter tenor kind of thing. And I naturally know that I have like a little bit of a peak at about 10K and about 4K in my voice.
Control it. You're trying to like,
and it's really hard to control on the fly, but I know that like certain preamps, like the 1073 is amazing, but I still have like a little bit of grit. I put this tube, this coil preamp on there, and immediately just like perfection.
It just fixed it, like so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's just like, I wish I could pull up an image. I'm so stoked on these. I had to wait like a year to get them. And they're so expensive, but like, it's so worth it. It's having the analog gears, you know, I sound like I'm just going on an analog gear rant. But
no, but I was like, I was talking to a guy and we're really into some old Frank Sinatra, right?
Yeah.
And the kind of mics that he was using, right?
Yep.
And just the sound that he could get. And I'm like, damn, that's like... It's like when you listen to like Motown guys, like in this, some of the stuff they're using, and it's not as perfect as some of the stuff today. And that's where I kind of point out to people, like, I don't necessarily want that perfect. You know, yeah. I think it's the imperfections. If I listen to like, you know, Exile on Main Street, and I listen to Keith Richards and how he's playing, you try to put that in a DAW on timing on BPM, he's not going to be all over the place. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, but that in itself is, or even listening to Funkadelic or Sun Ra, that's what I try to get at when I'm talking to other people that I produce with. It's like, just being obsessed with trying to be perfect on your DAW is not necessarily the goal. And like, well, I'm like, why don't you listen to Sticky Fingers? Why don't you listen to some Sun Ra? And that's what I'm talking about. Like, allowing those happy accidents.
Yeah.
And kind of going with it and letting it serve the song. Don't serve the DAW, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Write the song, and if there's things you want, you can do in the DAW, that's fine. Use it as a tool, but don't let it control everything that you're doing, you know, to make this kind of antiseptic sound. It's like, not, you know, as emotional as I think the music to me is emotional.
Yeah.
And if you get too into the computers, you can get the, you can edit the emotion out.
Right, exactly. That's correct. That's why you don't overtune your vocals, kind of thing. So
yeah. From a technical kind of standpoint. But so like, you're working on this big concept. Because of the pandemic, this I always ask people, have you, maybe before you it happened, were you playing live, or are you just working on this project as like a solo project and you haven't played live?
There's been a lot. Yeah, there's been a lot of lineup changes. So it was only live for a while. I want to say I moved to the Bay Area in 2015 or 16. And I worked at Guitar Center for a while, and I met a few people. And yeah, we had played live. That was all I had. They're like, where's the recordings? Where's the recordings? I was like, it's kind of like that white bear of like, it's going to, you know, it's just hovering over me at all times. Like, oh God, I got to get the recordings done. But I was so busy doing live stuff.
Yeah, it's hard if you play live all the time to get it down.
Sure. So I had to take a couple mental health breaks during 2018 and 19, but that was 3 years ago pretty much from where I basically started recording, and like really hardcore recording in 2019 for the project. Originally, it was only going to be like an album and a half, but it kind of turned into more than that. With the pandemic... It's interesting because we were ready to play live. I got a group of guys to do some of my live stuff in 2020, and pandemic hit. We had to take a break, but I still made them rehearse every week, and they got tighter and tighter and tighter. So finally, last month, we just like had a couple return shows. 2 days ago was like our last run of that series of stuff. So now we're just going to do some sparse gigs here and there. But yeah, it's been an interesting process with the pandemic. It's not that big of a deal. I just acted like, you know, hey, let's be careful, but we need to continue rehearsing and practicing. So,
yeah, I mean, I think what's been interesting about the pandemic with all the bands and artists I've been interviewing for the last 2 years is it's given people this kind of less pressure so they could actually work on their dream project.
Correct.
I've talked to a lot of artists where like, I didn't know if I was ever going to go into this idea because I was like on the road, and I was like, oh, I was just doing like Spotify singles. And then suddenly, oh, I can actually take some time and do like an album oriented thing or an EP oriented thing. And I see a lot of bands actually taking that direction, you know, still making a single for Spotify, but actually trying to build albums.
Right.
Which is, I think, is fantastic, because that's the way, you know, I grew up, like, again, as a child of the 70s, that's my preferred way to listen to music.
Right. Two things on that, too. The first one is just like with, I would have not physically been able to get my project started. So like the foundation of where the record lies is the drums. You start with drum. I mean, like the songwriting, obviously you write and whatever, but like I need to record the drums first.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jared is in a bigger band, the drum guy, that I have, mm-hmm. and he would have not been able to, like, he was going to be touring.
He'd been working. He would have never had him.
Yeah. I literally would not have had him because he had this huge tour coming up and he was not going to be able to do it. And he was rehearsing with the guys and it was already hard enough as is, but then the pandemic hit, and I'm really careful how I say this because I was very, very blessed that it kind of happened around that time that I was able to get him and work. So if that wouldn't have happened, if we wouldn't have had that break, you know, that wouldn't happen. But the second thing is, like, I've seen a lot of musicians like fall off the planet because of it, you know, and I hate seeing that, but
it's the bad part.
It's kind of a make or break.
Yeah. It seems some of them were like,
yeah,
so into that live, you know. I think what I've run into musicians are, there's certain type of musicians like they play like New York, and I'm close to New York and I've been in that scene, and the scene is what drives them. Right.
Yeah.
So playing every night in some small place, you know, like a CBGB's type size, right? That's what they like. They need that crowd feedback,
right?
The whole band kind of requires that to feel like into the scene and why they even do it, right? It went, as soon as they get the pandemic happened and they couldn't do that, and live streaming doesn't give you that feedback, right? Then they become like not able to have fun, right? And if you're not having fun with what you do because you're doing it because you don't do a day job, you're doing the music because it's passion, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you lose the thing that gives you the passion, then you kind of like get disinterested. And so some people who are not as much singer-songwriters or more like full band performance kind of need that stage have had a big problem. I had bands that I haven't been able to even get on my show because they can't, their whole dynamic is playing live.
Yeah. And I get that, you know. It was not fun. I mean, I don't even know. Coincidentally, 2019, I was not playing live anyway because I moved back to Iowa for a few months just to take care of some stuff up here. And I was already out of it, and it felt really weird because at that time I was gigging like all the time. So, you know, it's a different kind of transition. And playing live now, you know, I don't know if you've been playing live recently. It's kind of weird. Like, California. Yeah, it's hard to get people to come out.
I haven't been to New York. I've just been doing my festivals.
Yeah.
Because I used to go to Boston and New York, and I just haven't been able to get a gig that's worth me getting the U-Haul.
Yeah.
Together to get there. I got my road cases. I can move all my stuff. All this stuff I got road cases for.
Yeah.
And I got a roadie and everything. And I even have a booking agent that can get me to Europe, but I can't get there. Because like as soon as I got my booking agent, we were going to do stuff in Asia and Europe, and then the pandemic came and said, oh, guess what? I can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I just switched to just doing podcasts, which gets me out there in front of an audience, and doing festivals. I do these online festivals with my podcast guest, and I play too. And I've got everything in here with like cameras and OBS and all this stuff, so I can run like, you know, multi-camera shows. Like with That's different cool. angles and stuff. And I just found that, you know, I was living with that world now until I can get back to playing in New York. And I would love to go to Seoul. I actually lived in Tokyo in 2004 to 2006. Love to play in Shibuya. Oh,
wow. Cool.
Or Ginza or any of those places. Because the Japanese scene was so fantastic because I was just so amazed at how they would interpret multiple genres. I could go to different parts of Shibuya and see a band channel in Sun Ra, and then go and see a band sounded like Todd Rundgren, or a band sounded like, you know, AC/DC or Led Zeppelin, or some kind of like Asian Kung Fu Generation, like a unique like Japanese rock band.
That's cool.
That has their own dynamic. And I'm like, wow, they were so cool. I was just like I was just going out every night after my day job. And just hanging out at the izakayas, and it's like, damn, these bands are so good.
That's cool, man. That's really rad.
Yeah, this is awesome. I would love. I want to play in Japan again because I mean, Japan is just fantastic. But
yeah, it's definitely a goal. We just gotta kind of wait for the pandemic to finally come to an end.
Yeah, eventually we'll get out of this. Yeah, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but there's a whole
thing. I know, right?
But so have you done collaborations? But since you've been working on this big project, you know, maybe that's the collaboration. But do you like guest on other people's records or have people guest on yours? How do you work with that kind of collab concept?
So I'm pretty, this whole record is my body of work. It's pretty much, it's going to be my life work. I already know that. Hopefully I can follow up with it sometime, but I don't want to think about that. But so it's very personal and it's like, there is only a couple people that I would allow to be on my record. If that, I know that sounds conceited, but Jared was one of the only people I would have let on my record. Like there's pretty much nobody that I would have been like, I was just very comfortable with him. He's a very comfortable person to work with. I've done a couple. So that video that we played, the people who filmed that are in this band called, I always shout them out, called In the Background, one word. And they are amazing, amazing musicians. They did a live video at Sean, my engineer's studio, and they just blew me away. One of the best drummers I've ever seen as well. And I did a couple covers with him. Funny enough, we did a cover of one of the bands that Jared plays on, well, that Jared's in. We played a cover of one of the songs from them. So it was just this weird, like, cool thing. But that's about the extent of the collaboration. Oh, no, wait. I did some guest vocals on a local band's from here called Stay Out. I did some guest vocals there on a couple different songs and did some higher harmony stuff. And I don't know, like I'm not open to collaborations. It's just kind of been like,
yeah, if it's your vanity project, like Peg, you know, I used to be in bands. I used to be in these kind of punk kind of bands.
Yeah.
And like progressive rock type of bands. And I was, you know, I was the keyboard player and I was like a primary writer because like, that's what I like to do as a keyboard player. I like to write.
Right.
But when I was in bands, I was just a piece of that band, like a band. Right. Oh, they want to have some Hammond B3 or they want to have like a DX7 sound. So, okay, fine. They bring me in and I play. And it's not like the Peg. I would just go into what they're doing and kind of be in their motif. But the whole idea of Peg is like, that's my vanity thing. That's my sound. And it's really much a one-person project. From time to time, I'll bring a guitar player in, I'll bring a bass player in, I'll bring a drummer in, if they're kind of in tune with what I'm trying to do. And I have actually done collabs where I've actually, you know, had this one with this Los Angeles actress or actor, and we did a combined album because she was kind of in sync with where I was going and became this kind of Peg. All Control K was this lady I worked with. Cool. And we did an album together. And, you know, if I find somebody that like we're in the same space and they think it's going to work, then I'll do like a collab like that.
That's cool.
But most of the time, like it is like, you know, I understand you want to have your singular like vision, right? That's the thing that you're trying to get across. And that's why singer-songwriters, I like to talk to them.
Yeah,
because compared to somebody who's being produced, right, and you get in a record, there's like 10 different producers, and it was like, you know, or like the one guy, but it's not really, they didn't even write the songs, like there's all these other people who wrote the songs. I like to know that the artist I'm listening to is like a Neil Young or like a, you know, James Taylor or something, that they a Carol King, you know, that's where I kind of my head's at. It's like I like to know that that's their story, that they wrote it, that that's their vision.
Yeah, exactly.
As a fan, I mean, that's what I tend to go toward is music like that.
Yeah. You know, that kind of reminds me, it's not too much switching topics here, but like talking about like how you listen as a listener, as a musician as well, going kind of back to the Spotify thing. And I know that was one of your questions. Like, it's interesting just seeing how people write for singles versus albums and like, you know, how the pandemic might have changed a little bit of that. You know, I think there's like different parts to it. There's like the singles, then there's the EPs, or you know, like whatever they call them. There's different words for it, like playlist or what is it,
mixtape.
There we go.
That's the other form that you can kind of get an album through.
Yeah, and then album and LPs, and then double albums, and then like a concept album is like another part of that. But like
rock opera.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like that's played such a huge influence on me, like Pink Floyd's The Wall, and, you know, even like Black Parade, something more modern, or Tommy's The Who.
Yeah,
and, yeah, it's just like, it's interesting to see. For myself, I've been trying to write, I've been doing singles because that's the market we're in, but also like, kind of like you were saying, like it's a little bit more of like, this is my project and this is my sound. I want to make an album, but also making it my, it's a really big thing that I strive for, that I want to make them approachable.
Yeah,
so I want to make each song sound like, you know, not just like, oh, it's like this 30-second droning noise or something, and that leads into this thing. It's like, I want each song to like have an impact on its own.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing about the whole playlist world, it reminds me that we've kind of gone back to this 1950s thing, right? Where, like, you know, even if you look at Motown, as I always go back to an example, is they would take, you know, a song, Smokey Road, and then they give it to the Temps, they give it to Four Tops, they give it to the Supremes. They just run it through all the bands they had.
Right.
And if it didn't work with one band, they try it with another. And it didn't matter that it came out the week before, they try it again. and it was just like, it was kind of like a playlist, because most of the hits eventually got collected on records that weren't really like albums. They were albums, but it was just like a kind of spotty kind of collection of the hits, you know. And then eventually you get like What's Going On, you get Stevie doing like his, like, you know, Inner Visions, and doing, you know, all, you know, Songs in the Key of Life. They start getting guys who start writing in the 70s album format, but before that, everything was just a hit, you know, it's just a single. And it seems like we're in this kind of singles mode where everybody's just trying to do a 2 minute, under three minute song to turn into a, like a Pepsi ad.
Yeah. I mean, it just fluctuates back and forth, you know. The music industry, I work for a music consulting company. It's another hat I wear. I work some operations for that, for an ex record label exec. And he's really taught me that stuff changes all the time. Like, everything changes all the time. Like, you know, Spotify is the biggest thing now. Who knows 10 years from now what it's going to be?
Well, yeah, TikTok is kind of, yeah, that they're the kind of, this kind of like, you know, X brand, because suddenly you get some guy doing some strange thing, or some girl doing some weird TikTok, and it's not something anybody would have thought is the trend, and then that becomes the trend. And then they get signed, and then they got this whole different sound, and you didn't even see it coming because it just came out kind of like the underground. It's kind of like YouTube. Like, a lot of bands, like even like Odd Future Collective, and you know, they came out of that doing their own YouTube videos, and then they finally got, you know, they got picked up, but they were just kind of doing mixtapes and YouTube videos, just doing whatever they felt like. And then they started getting people picking them up like a YouTuber, and like, oh wow, this Odd Future thing is Wolfgang guys, these guys are doing something. You know, like Brockhampton's the same kind of thing. These collectives sometimes come out and they kind of drive the market because they had the guts to kind of just, I'm gonna do it the way I want, and if the fans come along, that's cool. You know, it's kind of like what happened with Sub Pop and SST and IRS, you know, back in the day. Is like, that's where I was really into the Sub Pop, you know, SST label, small labels.
Right.
That I was doing like radio stuff for college radio. And like, anything Sub Pop had, I'm going to play it. Anything that's on SST, I'm going to play it. If it's on IRS, I'm going to play it, because those guys are making good choices on the like emerging acts. And I wanted to support that because I was tired of this, what was in here, and like, you know, not that I don't like Aerosmith, but I don't want to hear it every day.
Yeah, I get that.
So I'm just glad that we have these kind of underground areas like SoundCloud and Mixtape and other places that you can, you know, I get so many ideas to interview people just going through my SoundCloud.
Right.
Or going on Instagram and seeing how many new bands show up.
That's cool. You know?
And it really, the Instagram has been my primary use booker for my show, because I will go find all these new bands, and I'll find it only has like 3,000 fans.
Yeah, exactly.
But then they sound really kick ass, and I'm like, I like it. Like, I'm gonna give them a shot because I think they're cool, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think that's how you build like a scene, you know.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it's you know, with the internet and stuff, you know, you don't have to rely on a local scene as much, but you know.
Yeah, you can kind of find like bands that are doing, like, I'm big time into that kind of Brian Eno, you know, Berlin Kraftwerk type of idea. And anytime I see a band, you know, if they're in Iceland or in Australia and they're doing, and they happen to be doing that or wherever they are, and I'm like, oh, I want to talk to them.
Right.
And then I'd end up like being like this worldwide, you know, kind of synth wave, dark wave, like, oh, these guys are doing what I like, so I'm going to talk to them. Or even if it, like, I listen to like a death metal band and like out of California or something. Oh, I like their, I like the way they're doing it. Kind of remind me of Black Flag.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts about like the future of the music industry? Because you're like in it in different levels, different hats that you're putting on.
Yeah,
I always ask this kind of a wide question. Like, what are your thoughts about the future of music?
I mean, that kind of blends in the last question. It changes so much that it's kind of like playing what if all the time, you know. I think the future of the music industry is always going to be dependent upon the younger generation. Like, they're going to always set the standard. And I think I'm on the cusp of being Gen Z, so I understand it. I try to use TikTok as much as possible. I just think it, like, from an emotional standpoint and like a psychological standpoint, it's draining. And it's a time waster, but I get why it's entertaining. Like, I refuse to be on it. Yeah. So it's like one of those things that I need to post all the time, but I don't want to, and I don't want to be on it. So it's just like, oh, you know, but
like what I find with some bands, like Gen Z bands or even my guys in my category. But, the problem I find with it is like, I have a 22-year-old daughter and she's like, Dad, you just can't take what you put for your YouTube video and throw it on TikTok.
Right. Has to be.
You actually have to look at what they're doing and look at the trend. And that's what, and I'm like, well, I don't want to spend all the time doing that because I'm trying to write music.
That's the biggest question, is how to, you know, blend your artistry into, because you lose it. We have that discussion on these music mastery consulting call things for these people, is like, how much of this is draining your soul and how much of it are you not able to do like the stuff you love? Cause there's a difference. There's a huge difference between, like, I hate to call out artists and so I'm not going to, but like artists that are TikTok artists versus artists who are like actually trying to write like music and like an emotional thing. Like,
labels
are dead. Independent artists are that. There's your answer for your future music stuff. Like, even my record label executive X person that runs these calls, who was the head of a huge label, a couple of them, says, don't go that way. Go to independent stuff. Be an independent artist, because they're not going to do anything for you. They've always wanted money.
Yeah, so yeah. It's not a good deal. I mean, when you see like Radiohead and Pearl Jam go indie.
If a band like Wilco,
are those kind of bands are going to go that way, then you're kind of like, okay, like they're big, like here, my heroes, but I'm like,
yeah,
they can't get a deal and they're fantastic. Like, how the heck am I going to get a deal?
Well, do you remember when they released In Rainbows?
Yeah.
Radiohead? Like, that was the biggest shock. They're like, pay as you want. What the hell? Like, that's not even a thing. They are like, say what you want about their music. If some people don't like it, like, I like it, but like, I love it actually. But like, what they've done for the music industry, they're always years ahead of in the future.
Well, I just love them because they remind me of like what happens if you take that kind of Yes Genesis idea and go forward, right?
Yeah.
So they to me, like them and Wilco, they're both going in this progressive rock inspired direction, but it's more modern. And I just like it. It's so fantastic. Yeah. And they don't really care. I mean, they never cared from the beginning. They're kind of like the way Genesis were created from art school guys, right?
Right.
And they just did what they thought was cool and what they thought was vital to them. Yeah. And then the fans found them. And I think that's my direction I like to go. Is just like, that's the way I think, like, artistically, I like to drive that way. Rather than trying to trend it. Now, I understand why you want to trend the TikToks and the reels and all these other things that come up. But yeah, I think it's like the heart of why I interview folks like you is it's like the singer songwriter to me is the soul of music, you know, and that's where you can find, like, to me, like the vital artists of the future, these emerging artists to have a voice and have something to say and not just a beat. Not that that's bad. It's cool to go out dancing and have a beat. But, you know, I like the depth of like an Idiot Wind.
Yeah.
Or like the Neil Young, you know, like, you know, anything he's done. You're like, that's the kind of depth I like to get to. So you're going to get that from a singer songwriter.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very, very good point.
So thank you for being on the program. I think we got a little bit long, but yeah, that's what happens every time. No, we tend to go an hour. That's what we do. And people have told us, oh, you should only do 15 minutes. And we're like, we're not doing that.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun. Check out the link below and whatever. And I'm hopefully going to get another release out here very, very soon. Great was the song I released last year, exactly, almost a year ago.
You have a target date for the record? Or are you still like...
I beat myself up about it a lot. I actually made a post.
You don't
want
to stress you out if you don't.
Yeah, no. I made up. My mom does that. Don't worry about that. She reminds me. Is like, Jordan, we really want to hear your music. But in a parallel, I made a post about this on Instagram. Yes, 2 days ago. Is that in a parallel world, I would have released it on 2/22/22 because that has a huge palindrome theme to like having things circle back around and just a lot of themes. It would have worked a couple days ago, but I'm still working on it. So I'm guessing I'm going to say the end of the year, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
3 albums, 48 songs. I'm doing the math here and I've been working 12 to 16 hours every day on the song. And by the time I'm 30, I'll have all 3 records done. If I work 12 hours a day, that's just the math behind it. But you know, maybe God intervenes and makes a day 29 hours instead of 24.
Yeah, I mean, it takes what it takes. Like, you know, if you're working on your big, you know, project. Yeah, yeah. I've got this thing I've been working on called Dark Ghost. I was supposed to put it out in 2017, and then I boarded it, and I was like, I still love it. And the weird thing is, like, it has its own vibe, and I really wanted to release it, but then I came up with other things. And then I just put it on the shelf and say, I'm not putting it out. And now I've kind of gone way beyond where I was, but I still like it. And I keep on like just agonizing. Should I release it? Because it's like, you know, it's from 2017. I think I should release it. But then
I'm so jealous of artists like you. I have a friend that has his record done. He's sitting on it. I'm so jealous of people like you. Like, I'm constantly still working on this stuff. And it's like, God, man, if I had a record done, I would release it immediately. So I don't know. Just work on it. See if it's relevant to you. And if it speaks to you, then I'll speak to other people.
That's good. I guess got to get back in my headspace to see if I should put it out. But yeah, I get it. Just like I sometimes want to go back and rework it. Then I said, no, I shouldn't touch it. That's what it was.
Do what you want. Yeah. Do what speaks to you.
You never know. But thank you. And your fans know we will be on Spotify. Video podcast within an hour. You can actually watch this on the permanent links on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. Twitter is like the new thing. They actually have these new permanent links that allow you to actually watch the whole podcast, which is something new that we've been able to do through StreamYard. And I think only podcasters can do it, but because you can't do it like by yourself, but it's through this method. So yeah, if Twitter is the way you like to watch things, we do have the ability for your fans to watch there.
Cool.
So thank you.
Whatever happened to that 140 character thing, you know?
Twitter is weird. Yeah, they even allowed it. You never know why they let people do things.
Yeah, exactly.
I take advantage when they let me do it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Cool. Thank you.
Good talking to you, man. Thanks again. All right.
Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. This is Josephine Electric, the lead singer of Phantom Electric Ghost. And so Newsly, it picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment
and reads them back to you in a natural human voice. So for the first time in history, on the net, the web becomes listenable. So they have, you can browse articles and topics and choose what you want to have start playing. Stop scrolling, start listening. They also have podcasts, as well as you can explore trending podcasts from 40 countries. Our podcast, The Fam Electric Ghost Show with Phantom, is over here too on Newsly. So download the Newsly app for free now at www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. And use that link on the podcast and use promo code GHOST2021. That's GHOST2021 and receive one free month premium subscription. And when you're at it, listen to the Anchor podcast on Phantom Electric Ghost, where we interview independent artists from around the world. And you get to get a window behind the music of independent artists that you might not normally listen to. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening to Phantom Electric Ghost and Josephine Electric.